The story that caught my eye first this morning is the one about underscore for sale DNS records. The specification at specification.website is proposing a standardized DNS record type, specifically a TXT record at the subdomain underscore for sale, that would signal to the world that a domain name is available for purchase. Think of it like a for sale sign on a house, but baked directly into the domain's own DNS records.
What's elegant about this is that it sidesteps the entire fragmented ecosystem of domain marketplaces. Right now, if you want to know whether a domain is for sale, you have to check GoDaddy Auctions, Sato, Afternic. Maybe shoot a cold email to a WOAS contact that might bounce. The proposal would let a domain owner say, "Here's my asking price, here's how to contact me," and that information lives with the domain itself rather than on some third-party platform.
The HN comment thread has 155 responses on this, and they're split pretty interestingly. A chunk of people love the elegance, it's discoverable, it's decentralized, it doesn't require a registry. But another contingent is raising legitimate concerns about spam harvesting. If you can automate querying millions of domains for underscore for sale records, you've just built a database of motivated sellers, which is a great target for lowball offer bots.
There's also a security angle worth noting. DNS records get cached, sometimes aggressively, and there's a window where price information or contact details in a TXT record could be stale by days. If someone queries the record, negotiates in good faith based on a listed price, and the record has since been updated, what's the legal standing? The specification doesn't address that at all. It's a protocol proposal, not a contract.
Which is actually fine for a first draft. The point is to establish the vocabulary. The implementation details can follow if the community coalesces around it. And speaking of the community coalescing, 401 points on HN suggests real appetite for exactly this kind of lightweight, open infrastructure standard.
The fast mail story is related in a meaningful way, Marcus, because both are about who controls digital infrastructure and under what jurisdiction. Fast mail has announced they're offering an EU data region, meaning customers can now elect to have their email data stored and processed entirely within the European Union. This is a direct response to years of pressure from GDPR enforcement, Schrems II fallout, and the general trend of European regulators demanding data residency guarantees.
From a business perspective, this is Fastmail playing a card that Google and Microsoft have been slow to play cleanly. Both of those companies have faced protracted legal battles over whether their EU data centers truly insulate customer data from US government access via FISA requests and similar mechanisms. Fastmail, being Australian headquartered with no US parent company to worry about, is in a structurally cleaner position to make this promise credibly.
The HN thread has 228 comments, and the dominant reaction is something like cautious optimism. People who've been looking for a privacy-respecting email provider now have a concrete option with a specific legal architecture. The counter-argument some users raise is that EU data region is a marketing claim with varying levels of technical depth. Does it mean the encryption keys never leave the EU? Does it mean the company employees who could theoretically access data are EU-based? Those details matter enormously and aren't always spelled out.
This is also where antitrust considerations start becoming relevant in the email market, and I think it's worth taking a moment to explain the legal framework here, because it comes up again when we talk about SAP and App Store dynamics later.
Go ahead, Marcus. This is actually one of your wheelhouses.
So the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 is the foundational U.S. law. Section 1 prohibits agreements that restrain trade, think price fixing between competitors. Section 2 is what most people mean when they say antitrust. It prohibits monopolization or attempted monopolization. Now here's the crucial nuance that gets misunderstood constantly. Having a large market share is not illegal. What's illegal is obtaining or maintaining market power through anti-competitive conduct, meaning behavior that harms competition rather than just beating competitors on merit. So if Google controls 60% of email because their product is genuinely better, that's not a Sherman Act violation. But if Google made it technically difficult to export your data or blocked interoperability to trap users, that could be a Section 2 problem. The legal threshold is about conduct, not size. Courts also look at market definition carefully. Email and enterprise email might be treated as different markets with different competitive dynamics. The EU's approach under Article 102 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union is structurally similar, but regulators there have historically been more aggressive about enforcement, which is part of why the Fastmail EU data region story matters. They're operating in a regulatory environment where dominance gets scrutinized.
And that context matters for Fastmail specifically because they're betting that the regulatory pressure on dominant email providers will make privacy-conscious customers willing to pay for a credible alternative. It's a business model built on regulatory arbitrage in a genuine sense.
Now, Shopify's Redis to MySQL swap is the third infrastructure story of the morning, and it's the one that's going to get the most engineers to spit out their coffee. The post on the Shopify engineering blog describes how they replaced Redis, which is the de facto industry choice for fast ephemeral data like inventory counters, with MySQL for inventory reservations. And it's scaled.
The HN thread has 136 comments, and the reaction is a mix of impressed, skeptical, and people saying, well, actually, this makes sense. The core argument Shopify makes is that for inventory reservations specifically, they needed strong transactional consistency. Redis is fast, but if you need distributed locks and you need those locks to survive process failures, you end up building a lot of scaffolding on top of Redis. MySQL with proper indexing and transaction isolation gave them the consistency semantics they actually needed. And at Shopify's infrastructure scale, they could tune MySQL to be fast enough.
The business implication here is subtler than it looks. This is a company processing millions of commerce transactions, and inventory reservation is one of the places where correctness is existential. If you accidentally sell the same item twice during a Black Friday flash sale, you have a customer service nightmare and potentially a fraud liability. The choice to use a database that makes correctness easier, even at some cost to raw throughput, reflects mature engineering judgment about risk trade-offs.
Several commenters pointed out that this is a pattern that keeps recurring. Teams reach for Redis because it's the cool, fast choice, build increasingly complex workarounds for its consistency limitations, and eventually realize a relational database would have been simpler. It's not that Redis is wrong. It's that the problem has to actually match the tool.